I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding Sequest.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
We are almost done with the second season of Sequest DSV.
We are.
Can you believe this is the penultimate episode?
Second to last, man.
Unless you are watching this on television in the year 1995.
This is true.
Where it was the last.
Which is so fucking weird.
So, in the next episode of Whiskers, you're going to hear us talk about the season two finale, the intended finale that is final, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it if you haven't seen it too much, but like there's a big status quo change.
Yeah.
Climactic events.
Yeah. A lot of stuff changes.
A lot of stuff changes. And this episode that we're here to talk about today was originally scheduled to air either earlier that same night as a big two-hour event, or the week previous. I've seen sources that say both, so I'm just going to report both, one or the other. That didn't happen. Instead of airing in May of 1995 as scheduled, it aired in September of 1995.
That's so far away!
The week before season 3's premiere.
What the fuck was the just, you know what, at that point, scrap the episode.
I have not seen a reason why. No one has told me. So that made me curious about the air dates of the home stretch of season two, and there's something kind of interesting happening.
Yeah.
So things are airing pretty normally every week or almost every week in January, February. I figure any interruptions are like, you know, special events, sports, you know.
Football.
Right, award season.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Then you get to March 5th,
uh-huh,
which is when they air Watergate. It is time to see Poseidon. Then there's a two-week break to something in the air. And then another 2 weeks, and so now we're in April. And we go from April 2nd with Dagger Redux to April 30th. With the Siamese Dream. There's barely two episodes in April. And then, yeah, we skip all the way to the end of May for Splashdown, which we aren't talking about because Blindsided, which we are talking about today, again, didn't air for another 5 months.
Thing is I want to say, wow, I'm so surprised by this. But I'm not, because this is how every TV show I watched growing up got treated.
Just
stretch,
big stretches.
Months like between shit, and then being like, wow, I can't imagine why this doesn't have good viewership numbers. I don't know, maybe because none of us can keep fucking track of when it's on.
Mm-hmm.
We thought it got canceled like 5 times already.
But yeah, this one is really unique, and yeah, being delayed from late May to mid-September. So yeah, let's talk about that episode, the long delayed, now in its correct and rightful place, season 2, episode 20, by our account, Blindsided, written by Clifton Campbell, back from Dreamweaver, When We Dead Awaken, and The Fear That Follows, and directed by Anson Williams, who last directed Meltdown.
Yeah, we like two-word, one-words.
Meltdown, Blindsided.
Yeah.
Compound words, we call them.
Compound
in
words.
In the business.
You know.
Yeah.
In the biz. I'm not in the biz.
Well, that's an abbreviation. That's a different thing.
I'm not down with the terms.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a manual. There's a style guide.
There's a manual.
We'll catch you up.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That would be helpful. That'd be useful.
So we begin with an establishing shot of the same prison.
It's the same fucking prison, except it's nighttime.
It's nighttime.
And I had to ask,
mm-hmm,
is it the same prison?
Or
is it just that all the prisons look the same?
they build them from kits.
I am not sure of the answer to this, actually.
But whether this is the same place where Dagwood was nearly institutionalized and where Mariah was rescued or not, this is finally named the Vera Dome, an element of the UEO Department of Corrections located in the Atlantic Ocean. It just says Atlantic Ocean. That is so vague.
Which, like, implies to me it's different.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't just drive up to a prison the Atlantic Ocean like they did.
Right. So there's at least two.
But from what I know, none of the other ones had names. They were just like UEO Correctional Facility.
Yeah, yeah. They just christened it. They broke a big bottle of champagne on those very sharp corners.
Is this supposed to be the bad one because it has a name?
This is even worse than where they were keeping Mariah.
Yeah.
Maybe it is where they're keeping Mariah, but not where they were going to put Dagwood. There's two.
There's two.
I think there's two.
I feel like there's more than two, because it's the UEO. They're big.
But in this prison, there are a pair of cellmates in a sort of bunk bed situation. You know who else has bunk beds?
Lucas and Tony.
Yeah. Whoa, parallels. Bunk buddies. And one of them is having a very bad time.
Yes. He's very groany.
He's very groany. He's shaking. The blanket is torn away and you see his gills. His gills.
And they are leaking goo.
They're quivering with this like...
slimy...
this yellow bile discharge.
It's so gross.
It's so gross.
It's so nasty.
So you might be wondering, what does this man's gill issue have to do with my fine friends on the Sequest? Well, let me tell you, we hard cut to the tarmac, where Piccolo is being summoned for a regular gill checkup. He's got to get his tires rotated in there.
Well, I don't think it's regular. This is your emergency
irregular, yeah.
Gill checkup. Mm-hmm. We're concerned. There was a rattle.
They might get gooey.
It's a recall. You got to take it in to see if yours is part of the recall or not.
Mm-hmm. You got to check your VIN number on your gills.
Yeah.
But he's been driven to the tiny local airport for this tiny local plane by Ford and Brody.
Yes. And he is not happy about it. He's like, that plane too small?
He's afraid of flying.
Makes me claustrophobic. I don't want to be on it. And they're like, you live on a submarine. And he's like, yeah, but it can't sink because it's already sunk. Like, it's fine. That thing's going to crash.
He does make an interesting point, which is, okay, so if something happens and the little O2 face mask comes down, that doesn't fit where I breathe from. And I think, huh, what an interesting angle. And also, wait a minute, do you not use your lungs?
He still uses his lungs. He's just being a sarcastic asshole.
Okay. Because in the previous 19 episodes, it seems like both work.
Yes. I think he's just being sarcastic.
Okay. But I think it might be a more interesting story if, yeah, he lost use of his lungs.
Right.
And is 100% gill.
Well, then, could he talk? Because air is required for speech. Right. So, like, he would not be able to speak.
Right. He'd have to have the little microphone and he just, like...
Put it to his gills. Where they go, like...
Well, no, you still need a larynx for that. So yeah, he'd just put it to his throat and he'd sound like an anti-smoking ad.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I was thinking, I don't know, somehow he got fancy control of his gills. But Brody is all like, yo, man, what's really up? Because, like, you're not afraid of flying. What's going on? Like, very caring. Serious conversation here. How can I help? I feel like he's going to therapy. He's learning how to work through his problems. He's really focused on communication right now, being there for those around him.
Well, there's...
because he has an interest in making friends and connection on a deeper level.
This is how Brody acts when there's no women in a 15-mile radius.
This is true.
We've never seen him this far from a woman before.
This is all his, like, sexual harassment, like, shit.
We will learn later in this episode, much later in this episode, there's a gang of 9 unnamed honeys on Sequest at all times we've never seen before.
True. So as they're there, there is another dude getting dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony knows him.
This is a very tense reunion. There's feelings, there's history. This man is named Eddie. Eddie is played by Leif Russell, who went on to play an Aryan Brotherhood member in the first two seasons of Oz on HBO.
You know, this makes sense, actually.
Yeah.
He looks like he would, actually.
Casting directors look at this man and they say, you know what? Prison. You are prison.
This makes so much sense.
So yes, Eddie here is the one with the leaky gooey gills.
Yes. Yes, he is. And so they are going together to be checked out. And as Eddie is getting, like, loaded up, the boys are like, yo, what's up? You got a history? Did this dude threaten your life? Do I gotta go beat him up?
Mm-hmm.
Do I gotta take care of my best friend Tony here? Brody is trying so hard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we are informed, no, something much worse. He saved it.
Yep, and now Tony Piccolo owes a Wookiee life debt to Eddie, the leak boy.
Yeah. It's like, fuck that dude. So they are on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony is enjoying some video games that I'm assuming he borrowed from Lucas.
His handheld game console has a full-size arcade joystick?
Yes.
This is crazy. This is crazy. No one would package this. You can't just put that in a backpack.
He did. and he gets told to cut it out.
Yeah, all the beeps and boops are annoying Eddie and his MP escort on this flight, yeah.
Who then is like, I'm going to unhandcuff hit this dude.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do.
Yeah.
On a plane.
Where is he going to go? Prisoner. It's a plane.
That's what he says.
Yeah, whatever.
And so the guard walks away to, like, I don't know, get some water, pee, mm-hmm, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Tony's like, dude, what the fuck is up? What did you do?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we here? I know you did something. And he's like, yeah, I shoved shampoo up my gills.
It hurts like the dickens, but oh boy, does it make people freak out. So this is the plan. He needed to create a reason where he would be flown out of this ocean-based prison island.
Yeah.
And that he would have a guy who really, really owes him one on the plane with him. So he could hijack the plane and escape.
I just want to know how no one identified that it was shampoo.
Like, they haven't sent him to the doctor yet. They're taking him to the doctor now.
I'm just going to, like, unless it was, like, unscented,
mm-hmm,
that dude is going to smell like herbal essence.
There is a quip about an herbal fresh scent. You and Tony Piccolo, you're on a wavelength.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
Knowing the time frame of when this took place, it was definitely herbal essence, the rose-scented one.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Absolutely. It's my shampoo. I buy that one. Yeah, that's the one I buy.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
His gills smelled like my shampoo.
I think this is before the famous ads, though, or maybe just getting into the beginning of them.
The ads, but that shampoo had a chokehold on the 90s.
Really?
And when they brought that scent back, like, within the past 10 years, I was like, oh my god, absolutely yes.
It smells like Sequest time.
Honestly, it smells like the pool to me.
Yeah?
Because that's the shampoo I would use after I'd go, like, to my swim team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, like, every other girl used it too, so the entire, like, pool shower just smelled like herbal essence, like, rose-scented.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Eddie's feeling good. He's feeling confident. He's got it all thought out. While Tony Piccolo is like, you fool, you moron, you idiot, do not do this. You are going to make everything awful.
And he's like, just watch me.
Begins hijacking the plane.
He hits the, like, call button, which, mm-hmm, makes one of the pilots, because there's only two fucking pilots and there's not, like, anyone else on this plane.
It's a small plane.
I'm just wondering why the pilot comes out. Like, they shouldn't even have a call button on this tiny ass plane.
You just yell, like, hey, bud, hey, you want something?
It's not like they're serving, like, drinks and pretzels. Okay, so the pilot comes out to be like, yes, what would you like? Would you like orange juice today or whatever? And the guard fucking, like, pummels him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, Eddie goes into the cabin and is like, hey, You're gonna follow these coordinates. We got, I'm hijacking your plane.
And the pilot says, please no, please, please not those coordinates. Can we go around this no-fly zone in a terribly dangerous, militarized part of South America?
It's like, I will literally go wherever you want, just like around.
Just around. And Eddie's like, oh yeah, likely story. You just want more time for us to get intercepted. I bet you know there's an airbase or something, huh? Yeah, no, you're just going to go straight there. And you're like, I really don't think we should, though.
And then we see a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Like a monster point of view, but it's some type of robot.
Yes, a lot of digital technical readouts along the left-hand side and some sort of meter across the bottom.
And the point of view is looking up at the plane going by.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we go to credits.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come back...
We are
still mid-hijack. Like, Tony's arguing with Eddie... Eddie's like, I'm gonna fucking hijack this plane. And the pilot's like, I'm gonna tase you. And Eddie's like, no, I'm gonna tase you back instead. And so he does. And then the pilot passes out mm-hmm. on the controls of the plane, which, like, sends them fucking diving.
But before this, like, there's sort of one last gasp at trying to reason with good old Eddie. Quote, the UEO ain't never gonna stop looking for you. Your life is over. And his response is, yeah, I know. So yeah, they're going down. Tony grabs the headset. He's trying to radio in, but there's nothing he can do. He doesn't know how to fly no plane. He barely knows how to fly a submarine.
Yeah.
Very different. Very different.
And so they crash, and there is quite the explosion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Eddie kind of made an international incident happen.
Yes, because we then go to the Secretary General, who is talking with everyone on, you know, Sequest, mm-hmm. the usuals, about how, like, yeah, this is really bad because, like, the Vice President of, like, the South American Confederation really doesn't like us right now and has been looking for, like, an excuse to go to war.
This is a UEO member state that is, at the same time, sort of a pariah that is keeping secrets, doing secret military buildups, and any sort of absurd, like, coincidence that kind of looks like, I don't know, secret military incursion into their business is going to make bad things happen.
Yeah. And so, like, this isn't good. This is going to be very hard. And Ford is like, well, Tony's not a criminal. He was on medical leave. Mm-hmm. He did not do this. Like, he is innocent in all this. We have to rescue our boy.
Mm-hmm. And so Bridger is, like, going directly against the Secretary General's orders in front of him on a video phone saying, like, hey, you get the Sequest over there.
Yeah.
Like, right now.
Like, let's go as close as we can. And
put in a course.
McGath is like, can you not? And he's like, absolutely no. We're going as close as I want. I want to.
That's where I'm
going
to go.
I want to be right, like, 10 feet from the border, so when shit goes down, I can go get my man.
But, like, in a neutral position.
Yeah. So, in the Confederation, we see the very fucked up plane.
It's so fucked up. It's actively on fire in many pieces.
Tony is alive.
Mm-hmm.
Not doing great, but alive. The pilot's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's a giant fucking snake.
There is a giant snake just dangling next to him out of a tree, and then it sort of, like, flops toward him. Like, when the scene cuts, when the angle cuts, I'm sure they switch from real snake to rubber snake, and they just sort of, like, pendulum swing it at him.
Mm-hmm. But then Eddie is there to rescue him and shoves the snake out of the way.
Punches the fuck out of that snake. So yes, the Gill boys are the only survivors.
And Eddie is also a bit fucked up, but, like, you know, they're doing a little, like, you okay? You actually okay? And he's like, yeah, yeah, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, good. And Tony pummels him in the face.
That's what you get. What did I tell you? What was the pilot trying to tell you?
If I had more than two hands, I would do so much worse. You fucker.
So yeah, they're gonna die in the jungle.
Mm-hmm. And Tony's like, we are so fucking screwed because if you would have listened to that pilot,
mm-hmm.
we would not be in the place where they shoot first.
Mm-hmm.
But you were too busy hijacking a plane!
So yeah, Piccolo is now assuming leadership and responsibility for their tiny band of two.
Yes.
Character development. Mm-hmm. It's for the Paella Boys and the Paella Boys only. But they've got it.
They've got it.
Yes.
This is the Gil Boys.
But like really, through the whole show to this point.
Yeah.
It's just Lucas, Dagwood, and Piccolo that are a different person now than they were when the season began. I mean, yeah. Ford has loosened up a bit. We've talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I guess he's honorary.
But like, I feel like it was all there before. I don't feel like that's like a huge transition.
Right.
I mean, Brody's become less sexual harassy.
Well, considering his very first featured moment is saying boys will be boys about an attempted assault.
It's growth in its own way. It's a bit concerning, but, you know, okay, little steps.
Not his first featured moment. There's like the whole like two-part Daggers premiere, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's really early.
Yeah. I mean, there was a worse like sexual predator in that episode, so... The other, like, Yu-Gi-Oh dude who was taking advantage of his position of power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now she's out for revenge somewhere in the Great White Ocean.
Mm-hmm. So, Tony is like, we gotta get out of here. Mm-hmm. We gotta move. We gotta find somewhere to hide.
Yeah.
Because we're gonna get shot.
Food, water, shelter, communication. These are our goals, our priorities.
Yes. And while they are talking... we get some more of the robot point of view.
Because it's just not season two without monster POV.
We need the POV.
Yeah.
We need some zoom in. We mm-hmm. need some, ooh, what's lurking in the corner?
We need zoom enhance. They never do zoom enhance.
We did get the, like, hey, we're going to blow up this picture of, like, who killed your mom, Brody, and, like, somehow be able to tell who the fuck it is.
That's true. They totally did a zoom enhance. That's yeah. right. They got
not, like, a point of view zoom enhance, but, right. like, a... Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it technically is, because it's, like, a dream state memory thing. But it's not, like, the monster POV right, that we're talking right. about.
Unless the monster is Brody.
Sometimes.
A thing we've said several times.
We are working on ourselves.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. But yeah, so as they're being watched, Eddie's like, wait, what's that? And Tony's like, nothing. Come on. Let's go. I found a gun. I'm going to keep this. You yeah. don't get the gun. No, I no, get no. the gun.
My gun.
And so they get moving. And as they go on their way, we get the point of view on the wreckage.
Mm-hmm.
And this point of view monster dude... sees the snake and watches the snake
yeah.
from his point of view. And then an invisible monster hand grabs the snake and throws it. Because fuck that snake.
It's not just an invisible monster hand. It's the Predator. It is the exact same visual effect as the Predator from the film The Predator. With the, you can tell where it is, though it's invisible, with like this terraced outline mm-hmm. as sort of a stutter lens.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, it's the Predator effect.
Mm-hmm. They head off,
mm-hmm.
And they find a village.
They find a little village.
Do
they find
village.
Villagers? No villagers.
No, it's an empty village. And they're like looking around and they're like, wow, this is so weird. It seems like everyone just left like mid-cooking. But, like, it's fine. I guess we can stop yeah. for lunch and eat this soup and not be concerned that we're in the place where they shoot first and we're in a village where people should be and the people aren't here.
They're hungry. There's duck soup just sitting there. The fire is still going. The soup is still warm. Yum, yum, yum.
All I'm saying is some of their concerns, like, if they want the soup, you fill up a bowl with the soup and you take it and leave the area.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You don't stay.
And have a big conversation about your feelings and your backstory?
Yeah.
That's not what you would do.
No.
It's what Eddie does.
It is what Eddie does.
So you might be wondering what got Tony Piccolo's old friend Eddie in this Supermax prison that may or may not be where they kept Mariah, the commando that almost killed all of humanity that one time.
Yeah.
Well, what happened is he was caught trying to smuggle some GPS tech. He wasn't a mastermind or anything. He was just one guy in the chain. But in this bust of some sort, an MP died.
Yes.
And all the heat went on to Eddie because, wouldn't you know it, his partner in this stage of the plan was an admiral's son.
Yeah.
And the way this is told is like Piccolo showing that, yeah, I didn't forget about you. I know these facts that are reported in the file. And Eddie's like, oh, but did you know this? Did you know this part? How does this other detail color your perception of your old friend Eddie?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And Eddie's like, all I needed was a chance. Like, mm-hmm. You got a chance. I would give my arm to be, like, under the command of Bridger and Ford.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has a lot of respect for, and like, a little bit of jealousy, and he's sort of proud and sort of, like, regretful. Like, this scene is good. The scene is good. Eddie is good. And in the end, Eddie got screwed so bad because he was offered a deal and cops lie. Cops lie every goddamn time. Cops lie.
Could have told you that, Eddie. This isn't really a surprise.
Hey, if you just take this plea, things are going to go well for you. You got friends in high places who are going to owe you a favor. The Admiral doesn't forget, you know, people who help out his son. Yeah, he does. Yeah, he fucking does.
Yeah.
And that's the good cop. Meanwhile, the bad cop is talking about how, you know, his mom's going to die of old age before she sees a dime of that Navy pension.
Fuckers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Tony also has a little moment where he's like talking about how, you know, did he get a break? Maybe. Did he deserve it? That's questionable. But he took it, and mm-hmm. he's bettering himself, and he's, you know, he's turning his life around.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And just because all that's happening, it didn't mean, like, he screwed him over or anything.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Eddie, who from his perspective was just a guy who had a thing in his car, things went bad, and the whole world crashed down around him,
mm-hmm.
says, I quote, I just need a break like you got, Tony. I swear I could turn my whole life around like you did.
Yeah.
Aw, Eddie. Aw.
Mm-hmm.
That guy died, though. What happened? How did the guy die? Who shot the guy?
No one's going to tell us
that. No one knows. It's ambiguous. You don't know. You don't know who to believe.
But then we are interrupted because the point of view monster man
mm-hmm.
rushes in and grabs Eddie and throws him over his invisible shoulder.
It starts with him just flying out of nowhere. He's just like hoisted on a wire. It's a good wire shot.
Yes.
Before you even see the shimmery invisible man.
And then he's thrown over like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah. And Piccolo gives chase in the most intense run.
Well, the monster's moving really fucking fast. With a man thrown over its shoulder.
If they did any more than one take, Mr. DeLuise would just be puking outside on location. Oh my god, he's going all out.
So they're running through the woods, and Tony gets a shot, a moment to like try to shoot at the thing, and it does fucking nothing.
But Tony Piccolo, incredible marksman, he shoots this thing like 5 times, hits 100%.
Yeah. Doesn't shoot his friend.
Which is really, I mean, yeah, to not hit Eddie and to hit the invisible thing. Wow, incredible.
Mm-hmm.
He's at the range every day.
So then the thing runs off again with Eddie as Eddie's like, ah, Tony, help me, screaming, ah. Tony loses them.
Mm-hmm.
They escape in the woods, but then...
Well, the thing throws him like 12 feet.
That's right. It, like, chucks Tony across, like, the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And then he tries to get up and go after, but he loses them. And is found by a whole bunch of Confederation military.
Yeah. The local boys they were trying to escape from, or escape notice of. They did not escape notice of.
No, he ran directly into them. Yeah.
So we fade out and come back from commercial with Tony Piccolo bruised and battered in this concrete bunker, coerced into making a false confession of all the UEO's espionage crimes against one of its member states.
Yes, they were sent there on purpose.
Mm-hmm, under Bridger's orders.
And Bridger needs to be, like, tried.
For murder. Bridger should be held legally responsible for the death of the plane crew because it was all his operation.
Yes, and as we're watching Tony, like, state all this, the camera then goes to, like, pulls out, and we see that the crew is watching this.
It is Bridger, Ford, Brody, Lucas, and McGath. McGath has decided to say, no, it's okay that you parked there. I'm coming, too.
Yes. And so they're like, well, shit. Lucas has, you know, run some stuff and is like, it's not digitally altered. It seems to be him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But he was absolutely forced into saying this, right? Like, we're all in agreement about this. Yeah, like, Tony, he's not saying this by his own choice.
No, no. Like, and yeah, you can see it in his face, both in his acting and, you know, the contusions.
Mm-hmm. And so they're like, okay, well, what could we do? Could we leak the flight plan? And they're like, nah, that, like, no one's gonna buy it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The truth would look like a lie. You can't combat this lie that looks like the truth. Whoa, what a world to live in. And McGath is here with his insider information into the military and diplomatic situation.
Yes.
With this unnamed confederation. They just call it the Confederation.
They call it the South American Confederation.
They do? Okay,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's new. That was not in the season one Bible. They made a new confederation.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But that's what it's called. That's what they call it at the beginning of this episode, and they reference it like three times.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, his idea is this is all just stalling for time. They have something they don't want found, so they need to, like, cause a stir, cause a distraction to give them time to either finish it or scuttle it before we can do something.
Yeah, and McGath's like, you know what these people are like. They got all this stuff going on. You remember when they gave us 10 feet of snow in August?
No, no. I don't!
You have never mentioned this.
I would love if that happened earlier in the season, you know, or something.
Can you provide some more information? When you say us, where?
Yeah.
The entire country? Florida? Questions.
Yeah, do you mean New Cape Quest?
Was it just a little snow cloud that followed the SeaQuest around? I would like to know.
So yeah, these people can control the weather. And they are a highly militarized nation that is pumping all of their money into both conventional arms, but mostly weird experimental tech arms.
Yes.
That leaves all of the people completely impoverished.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's one of those.
And they're like, you know how we know these people are evil? They got this complex, and it's painted in lead paint.
Mm-hmm. So they're doing something secret in there. And so McGath has brought some spy photos from home, from like satellites and spy planes,
mm-hmm.
and says, hey, kid, what do you think?
And Lucas is like, ah, yes, those white flares, those are definitely electromagnetic experiments.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's just throwing out wild theories about these photos. Like, I don't know, it could be a gravity gun. He says three things, and that's the last one, and everyone's like, damn, gravity gun, that'd be fucked up.
And that's why there's white flashes, is because, you know, yeah. It messes with the magnetic field, and yeah, mm-hmm, makes complete mm-hmm. sense.
And so Brody's like, you know what we should do? Commando raid. And everyone looks at each other like, I don't want to do commando raid, but god damn it, go do commando raid! And Brody's like, yes, finally, commando raid! And, I love commando raid.
And McGath is like, you know what? Yeah, commando. I know I told you not to be here, but I'm so glad you didn't listen to me. Go fuck him up,
go
Brody.
Fuck him up.
So back in the bunker, Tony is sat down as he is continued to be questioned by men in suits.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Including the major bad guy of this entire confederation that we've mentioned. That's been mentioned a few times, the minister.
Yes, colon.
Minister Cologne.
Except they say colon most of the time.
Well, not everybody speaks with a Latin American accent.
Yeah.
Minister Cologne is played by Juan Fernandez, who might be best known to viewers at the time as Miguel, the villain's henchman in Crocodile Dundee 2.
I've never seen that.
However, he's most known to you and I because we see him every time we rewatch the Fast and the Furious series.
What?
Now, I'll give you a hint. We see him every time we rewatch those movies, but I bet a lot of people don't.
Is it because we, like, work in movies other people don't watch?
Mm-hmm. Like what?
Well, we watch Tokyo Drift, which a lot of people don't. But also the prequel, the Han prequel. We watch also the short.
Better Off Dead? Yes. Not better. No.
We also watch the shorts.
Yes, yes. Los Bandoleros.
Yeah.
He plays Elvis, the Dominican politician in Los Bandoleros.
I feel like you thought I was going to get to this faster.
Who gives Dom the inside information on where to find a gas shipment that might be liberated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wink, wink. If someone did such a thing, it wouldn't be such a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to remember, there are a lot of things we watch that other people don't watch in their rewatch.
It's not Better Off Dead. It's Better Off Tomorrow is the name of that other movie. Yeah.
But, like, there are parts here. There are options.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is okay to skip the Too Fast prequel. That one's not very interesting.
Oh, that's the...
It's like the 10 or 12 minute short of Brian racing his way across America in between movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll watch it, but...
It's no Los Bandoleros.
It's not.
Which is really the heart of the whole series.
It's not, but, like, it's my boy Brian. Like,
sure, sure. He does have sex with ladies in it.
He does.
He does.
He does.
So they are asking him questions, not just about Sequest, not even really about Sequest, but about his unique physiology.
Mm-hmm.
They're so very curious about what the UEO is doing with these water-breathing freak boys.
Mm-hmm. And so they throw him on a table.
Mm-hmm.
And then a doctor starts shoving his hand up into his gills.
And it looks so gross. It is such a violation.
It's such a violation. It looks absolutely excruciating.
Mm-hmm. And
it's also gross.
It's gross. There is a parallel in much more recent television, a very mm-hmm. direct one. Which is in, I think it's season 2 of The Boys.
Mm-hmm.
There's that lady who sticks her hands in the deep's gills.
Oh, yeah.
And that is framed very specifically as a sexual violation, as sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind you can show on TV because it's a fake organ for fishmen.
Yes.
And I don't know if this scene is supposed to carry that connotation. But because of, you know, the ripples of time, it does to me.
Yeah. I mean, you're shoving your hand into an orifice.
Yes. Like, right? Yes.
It's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they want to know how many there are. They want to know what missions he's been sent out on. Like, what sort of parameters for his incredible fishman espionage. And he's like, you're barking up the wrong tree. Like, they tried it just to see if they could. And it hasn't done much good for anybody.
Yeah.
And it hurts like hell when you shove your mitts in there.
They take him back to his room.
Mm-hmm.
And for now, more to be continued later.
Right, right.
Our party.
Our party.
Our Brody party.
They are not Brody boys. No. The sleeveless crew.
Except not, because we're only allowed to have 50% sleeveless at a time. And because there are four of them,
uh-huh.
I was very disappointed. Oh, okay. Ortiz, sleeves out. Guns a-blazing. Absolutely, yes.
Henderson right alongside.
Which means we don't get Ford and his guns.
It's true.
He has to wear a t-shirt.
Ford and Brody round out the quartet with the shortest sleeve t-shirts that are still sleeved.
It's disappointing.
Sure, sure.
But it's a thing. They only allow so many to be sleeveless at a time.
I want to know why the shin armor is gender-locked. Why yeah, can't Henderson protect her shins?
Only the boys get the shin armor and the knee pads.
What if she wants to kick somebody? What if there's brush whipping her?
Why do they have shin pads to begin with?
I would imagine it's for the underbrush, right?
That's why they wear boots.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it because they're like, we're going to do, like, kung fu and kick people a lot?
Yeah, yeah.
That, and Henderson just doesn't kick people.
She just doesn't kick people. She shoots people.
Yeah.
She will shoot people shortly. So we find them finding that same village with the same duck soup.
Yes. And they find an old random dude hiding.
They do. And he's like, hey, I speak sort of English. And they're like, cool, we don't speak anything else. We're an international navy.
Except Ortiz does speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And uses it later.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently does not matter in this matter. Scene.
Well, this guy's English is good enough. We don't got to worry about it.
Yeah. They're asking about, like, hey, what happened? And he's like, oh, everyone left who didn't want to die.
Yeah, okay, story checks out.
Gotcha. Have you seen our dudes? And they're like, oh yeah, one got taken...
By the monster,
and the other one got taken by the soldiers. Cool, can you show us where?
Can you show us where the soldiers are? And he's like, yeah... I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to go with you because you're safer with me and I'm way safer with you. And this like gets them to be like, all right, I guess we're babysitting this guy.
Yeah. And so he starts leading them through the woods to a road.
They take a big nature hike.
And he's like, oh, yeah, like, you know, the soldiers ran off with him that way. But let's go this way. This is where the port is. And they're like, no, we want to go to the soldiers.
I want to go to the soldiers.
And he's like, no, it's safer over here. We go this way.
And so the monster POV is watching them as they hike across country.
And they're like, we're not gonna go with him. And so the dude like goes walking off into the woods, and they're like, we're gonna walk down this road to the soldiers. And then they're screaming.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go running back. Ortiz like takes the fuck off.
There is this big argument before this point where they're like, oh. How responsible do we feel for this old man?
Ortiz is like, we can't just leave him here. And Ford's like, he lives here. Which, true.
And Brody is even harder on the other side. Like, fuck this guy. Fuck this country. Fuck everything. I can see a woman. I'm an asshole again.
It lights up. Henderson's like only fucking job in this is to like try to comfort the old man.
Yes.
No, it's okay.
It's okay. They're there. But yes, they split up. He's screaming. They're rushing after him. And wouldn't you know it, he's screaming because the monster's got him.
Yeah, the monster's got him in a tree.
Yeah. He's dead, this old man.
He's dead.
This old man, he played none. He died. He's not playing no more.
He died. And so the monster jumps out of the tree. And they all, like, fucking shoot at it, which, like, doesn't do anything.
But once again, 100% accuracy, all expert marksmen.
I'm gonna go with, these guns have tracking.
They're not just that good?
Yeah.
You wanna know why no one misses?
Hmm.
If they hit, it's the same effects shot. If they miss, you would expect, like, a spark to go off or, like, a tree to catch fire or something. Don't gotta rig any of that. If they just fire their visual effects lasers at the visual effects creature.
True.
There you go.
No
squibs needed. They just hit the thing.
And while it doesn't do anything at first, it does flash its invisibility off.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this, like, full black suit, this armor.
It's kind of reminiscent of the Mantis suit from, you know, the show Mantis, running roughly this time.
Yeah. But then its invisibility comes back and it goes running off through the woods.
Mm-hmm. And on the other side of the commercial, they are reporting this into their technical expert, Lucas Walenchek.
Yes.
Who theorizes, oh yeah, that would make sense. If it's got a negative energy field, you firing your lasers would increase that energy without increasing its mass. You know, the mass of a negative energy field.
Yeah.
And then he says, but why would they be so secretive about something a first-year physics student could work out? What? What has happened in the next 25 years that is first-year physics homework? Making invisible monster men.
Let's remember Lucas did not have a normal childhood. He might have a distortion about what is normal physics.
I'm pretty sure first year physics students are still just doing like Maxwell's laws and working out problems from the book, right?
Not Lucas.
I think so. Okay.
Tony is in a cell.
Mm-hmm.
He notices something on the wall. A little weak spot where the water's been dripping and like his wall's kind of peeling away. But he's interrupted because he gets dinner.
Yeah, he gets a meal.
Yeah.
When he was being dragged around previously, he makes sure to note that, hey, the treaty says I get 3 hots in a cot. And so, yeah, there you go. He's even got produce. There's an apple in it.
It was an apple.
Mm-hmm.
Good-looking bread.
Yeah. I mean, for how else they're treating him, this is pretty nice. This
pretty
is
nice.
Better than...
That's a really big apple, honestly.
You expect just, like, gruel and muck.
That might be what's in the cup.
That might be.
But, I keep wanting to say trio. They're not a trio. I mean,
there's
they could
a
be a trio because, like, what's Henderson doing?
Nothing that involves the shin. It's unsafe.
So they are lasering the fence.
Yeah, slice it open.
They are making a big hole in it, because that's sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
If I was lasering the fence, I'd laser, like, a slit up so you could, like...
Fold it back?
Yeah, so it's not as obvious.
No, big hole. Big, perfectly circular hole.
So fucking perfect.
But then they go in... And they find Ortiz because he has already sabotaged the elevator that goes down. They're controlling the space. They're splitting up into squad tactics. They're talking about flanking.
Brody uses the largest grappling hook I've ever seen in my life.
But usually when it's time for Brody to put together a fire team, they just sort of wander around in Florida parks in daylight.
Yeah.
This has also come a long way.
It has. So he grappling hooks the roof of this building with such a big thing that then it like lowers its own rope ladder.
Uh-huh.
That they climb up.
It's good. It's good equipment. It's fun. It's a fun little toy.
Yeah. They head on into the building. Brody's leading the way. They're knocking out some dudes, punching some dudes.
Everything is going according to Kaikaku until they get to Tony's cell. And it's empty. He's not there.
No.
You can't rescue a guy who already escaped.
You know what he did? He found that weak spot in his wall and he made a perfect hole.
Yeah. Apparently, this prison is just made of plaster. Like, you just sort of, like, poke at it and you make a hole.
I feel like it rains around there, and so maybe this isn't, like,
some sort of,
the best.
You think this is the sort of forest where it often rains?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
In this region where they only survive the crash because it's a swamp? It is a jungle swamp?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, might be kind of humid. I'm not sure about how these balls are gonna hold up. While they are discovering this, though... Their hole gets found out, too.
Oh, no. They discovered the hole.
All the holes are getting explored.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the army is now looking for them because they're like, hey, we found your hole.
They never made it to the medical exam. That scene didn't happen.
That was next.
The plane crashed. They didn't get to the doctor. So, like, in the reality of the scene.
Yeah.
Okay, dramatically what happens is an unexpected thing happens and then the tables are turned, they get captured. But in the reality of the scene, they just don't have an exfiltration plan?
No.
So as soon as they get to Tony's cell, whether they grab Tony or not, they should have a way out. They don't. They all get grabbed. There's like 40 dudes and they all give him a big bear hug.
And what I love is because the alarm starts going off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Henderson and Ortiz are in the cell with the hole.
Yes.
To the outside world.
Yes.
They could just like go through the hole and hide out so they can try to rescue the other two.
They do no such thing.
They don't. They run straight into the ambush of people like coming to get them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just go through the fucking hole.
And so now, instead of one Sequest crew member being held prisoner, there are 4.
Well, yeah, because Tony's
free. And one
free.
On the loose. Yeah,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Bridger is yelling.
Yes!
Very loudly.
I mean, earlier in this episode, we heard about how good cop, bad cop is standard UEO procedure.
Yeah.
And now it's McGath and, it's McGath and Bridger.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Bridger is, give me my fucking people back or I will blow you up.
Yeah, every last one of you. And McGath's like, hey, there's just a misunderstanding here. I'd appreciate it if in our deliberations you keep this as a completely separate issue from the other diplomatic relations we're having, you know, last week. This is a whole other thing. Let's work together. And Bridger's like, can I get the nuke codes now? Hey, Ford. Damn it, you have Ford. Who else has the key? I need the nuke codes right now.
And so the Confederation president dude is like, well, fuck this. I might, like, not be a member of this organization anymore. You could threaten to, like, bomb them back or something. I don't know. That's just like, I'm going to turn in my membership.
I may or may not have gravity guns. You'll never know.
I have gravity guns. They're really cool.
They're really cool. You're not gonna see them. They're too cool for you.
They're so cool,
though. They're so cool. I hope you like snow in July.
And so after they get off the call, the president, vice president dude turns to, like, his general guy, and they're talking about how, like, we gotta find him, he's out there somewhere, and dude's like, man, our soldiers don't want to go into the swamp anymore, they're scared.
Ever since the Scarab. Ooh, spooky name.
Yeah.
Spooky name.
Yeah. They don't want to go to the swamp.
They don't want to go. I don't want to go to the swamp. And there isn't even a scarab out there. It's just,
you don't want to go to the swamp?
I don't want to go to the swamp. I'm drowning in the swamp.
The swamp, swamp.
Swamp.
Swamp. Swamp. It's fun to say. It makes your mouth do fun things. Squamp.
Squamp.
So Tony is hiding in a lab.
Yeah, he's being very sneaky.
And he sneaks out very well because there's a couple people in there. But then he hears a door opening in the hallway, so he has to hide in another room. And, like, he starts backing up, and he bumps in to someone. And he's like, oh, fuck, okay, can I at least get a shower, like, before you take me prisoner again? But, oh, wait.
That's not a guy, that's just a suit. That's just a mannequin man.
Yes, it's just a few of them. And it is the suit we saw that turns invisible.
These are the Scarabs. So what does he do? What's a boy to do? He calls the boys.
He's like, hey, Lucas.
He doesn't call the captain. He calls Lucas. And Dagwood is just in Lucas's room, like, flipping through a magazine.
He's looking at one of Tony's dirty mags.
Yeah, yeah. Very confused about what's going on.
Yes. And yeah, so Lucas isn't like, hey, Captain, get over here. He's just like, okay, Lucas, or like, okay, Tony, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh man, Project Scarab, man, that's crazy. You know what this is, Tony? This is light bending technology. We got an invisible man here.
And, of course, these guys can't control it because it pulls electromagnetism out of the air to upgrade its own AI, overriding its orders and programming. Obviously.
That's why it's gone rogue.
It pulls the electromagnetism to make the AI good. Duh.
And this explains why there's all the white flashes, is there's a lot of extra electromagnetism happening with, you know, it going rogue. Obviously. And it's like, man, you know, what you saw, it was the prototype. And Dagwood's like, but I'm the prototype. Different prototype.
Different project, big guy.
There's more than one.
So, yeah, the only live Scarab is the one that went rogue. The others in this lab here have an important component removed until they figure out how to make them not go rogue. So, okay, that's cool.
Then Tony's like, wait, hold on, I gotta disconnect this call because I hear something.
And he hears the Council of Bad Guys, the minister, the general, and the evil research doctor.
Through the air vent.
Talking about Eddie. They found the other one. He'd been hiding submerged for 2 days, and he's real fucked up.
He's so broony and smelly.
And hungry.
There's probably a lot of leeches on him. That is not good for your skin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
See, that's one thing they didn't think about with this whole gill technology thing, is just because you can doesn't mean the human body can survive it.
Right,
like, right. We might be made of water, but we can't handle water for that long.
I will say the prosthetic gill effects have never looked this good.
They are so good.
And never been as much of a point of focus, even in Abalon when they were super brand new.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're good.
Well, and those all focused, I feel like, on like, hey, look at this shot of like the gills on the back, like a full shot where they're moving and stuff, where a lot of these have been very zoom in.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, they're so clean.
Like, Eddie's weird, shuddery breathing when he's, like, got his fake symptoms in the cold open. Oh, it's good. It's good.
Yeah, so Tony is like, well, fuck, they got my bro.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, of course, Minister Cologne wants to have his own army of amphibious strike troops. And the evil research doctor's like, well, what makes you think that we're going to succeed where the UEO failed with all their resources? And he's like, well, have you considered that we are far more evil?
Because we don't care if anyone survives.
Yeah, yeah.
And the evil doctor dude is like, but wait. Maybe the UEO can help us with the scarab and get it back under control. And they're like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
There's no way that it would take one UEO teenager around 20 minutes to fix it all.
It's not like the flagship has them on board or anything.
How sad is it that all Miguel Ortiz ever wanted to do was to run and gun and be a super cool spy dude in the Latin American jungles under a military junta, and he finally does it, and they just lock him up in a cell the whole time.
They do.
That's so sad. He didn't even get to use his weird eye drops that make his eyes bloodshot.
Oh my god, that was so fun. He was so on crack for that episode. He's all over the damn place. And he's like, I'm going to go here. I'm going to go over here. I'm over here. I'm fast as fuck, boy. Like, where am I?
You know he was so excited to sabotage that service elevator. He's like, yes, this is spy shit. This is the real shit.
Yes.
And now he's locked up in a cell with everyone else.
How much you want to bet that he put eye drops in to do that? I love Miguel. I love him so much. But, dude, I know what you're doing.
Eye drops, I guess.
Henderson's just there like, really, Ortiz? Do you have
Again? Every time.
It's like, how do I look? How do I look? You look high, dude, but like...
Sleeves gone, eyes red, every single time.
Okay, I know he has, it's tank tops he has, but I would love it if like, his whole thing was he was given like, shirts, and he just like, ripped the sleeves
off. Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh!
Hulkamania running wild.
Yeah.
So yeah, they are all in their cell looking out the window like, hey, this doesn't look hard to escape from. And Ford's like, yeah, that's what they want. They want us to escape so they have an excuse to shoot us all in the back.
Yeah.
So they don't. They sit tight for at least a minute.
Part of it is also Ortiz is like listening to the conversation because he speaks Spanish. So he can understand them. So he's listening to what the guards are saying outside, and they are saying, hey, we really want them to escape, so let's, like, act like they totally can, so then we can shoot them. Ortiz, you should use your Spanish sometimes.
Or he doesn't want to step on the toes of his best friend,
they're
Amigo.
All like, oh, well, I wonder what they're saying out there, and no one's like, hey, Ortiz.
What are they saying?
What are they saying? They're like, what are you doing? He's like, shh. Like, dudes, I fucking speak Spanish. I know what they're saying.
So they're sitting and they're waiting until suddenly all hell breaks loose.
Mm-hmm.
There's carnage in the hallway as an invisible force is just tearing their guards apart and then breaks the door off the hinges
and throws it
to the side.
Or actually, yes, yes. Well, no, because, like, Ortiz is like, wait, I have a fuse.
Mm-hmm.
I still have a fuse. So he, like, puts the fuse, I think, on the door, and they're going to blow it.
But the scarab does just lift the door
off before they blow it.
Yeah.
It's so goofy. Like, why did we talk about the fuse, then?
It is never used. It is an unused fuse.
Yeah, and so we're having this, like, you know, monster point of view stare down thing, and they're like, what's going on? And then Tony's voice comes through the scarab, like, hey guys, it's me! Lucas figured out how to get this under control!
Yep, just like that!
And then we cut to Tony, who's, like, in the lab with, like, a VR headset and, like, a keyboard that's, like, attached to him, kind of like a accordion.
Yeah, this rig is special, and I'm pretty sure this whole sequence is why they made sure he was playing video games in the plane.
Yeah.
Because that's the equivalent skill set. Not that, you know, he's the helm of the submarine, which actually would be a farther stretch, because that's so entirely different.
Yeah. No, he plays video games.
He plays video games, and therefore he can be the scarab man.
Yeah.
It's...
You know what they could have also done? They could have been like, yeah, this is Lucas's video game. He loaned it to me. Yeah. And then when he goes missing, Lucas is going to be like, don't worry, I have a tracker on all my video games. I'll track him down.
What they could have done, what I thought this was at first was, oh, Lucas found a way to subvert the, like, missing component in the other suits. I'm piloting one of their spares. No, by the end, it seems pretty clear this is the rogue one. That was running wild and upgrading itself on the fly.
Is it?
No. That one never comes up again. They never talk about it again. In the end, they all talk about the cover-up and never about having to nab the wild one before they do their cover-up. I have to assume this is the wild one.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I guess it's ambiguous, but it makes more sense for what they say... that it's the one we've been seeing all along, but yeah. less sense for what they've said about it previously.
True. So they're all like, come on, dude, we gotta leave. Let's get out of here. And he's like, no, I gotta stay for Eddie. I gotta find him. Mm-hmm. He's alive. And they're like, fuck that dude. Let's go. And he's like, no.
No, I have superpowers and I'm putting my foot down. So we find Eddie in a surgical theater, about to have exploratory surgery. I mean, I guess what? Step one is carve out his gills?
Yes.
And just see what makes him tick?
But then the suit comes in, and as they're gonna scalpel Eddie, the invisible hand grabs the scalpel.
Mm-hmm. The invisible hand grabs the scalpel. It happens every day across America, and that's why medical care should be free at the point of service.
Yes.
Yes.
He also drops the pants on another surger in there.
A surger?
A surgeon. Another doctor in there.
There we go.
I'm like...
A surgery doctor is a surger.
I am fighting how tired I am right now so hard. I have suddenly, like, dipped and I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna, like, fall asleep if I blink too long.
Say swonk.
Squonk. Squonk. Squomp.
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 So yeah, Tony's doing invisible super strong pranks, and as he has, like, I don't know, gained dominance over the room, the Sequest escapees arrive with their big laser rifles, and there is a suggestion that Tony is about to go mad with power and just start, like, choking dudes out for the fun of it. It doesn't really go that far. Nothing comes of it, but, like, Ford has to warn him, and he's like, ah, no, don't take it so seriously. It's not a big deal. Anyway, I'm going to hold up more people by their necks. Ah, don't take it so seriously. It's no big deal. I'm just fooling.
He also ends with grabbing the two suits.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck them.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, not really. Don't worry, I'm not going to strangle them. I know, but fuck them.
You're not allowed to assassinate Minister Cologne. I'm sorry.
What? Not
because he has to meet Dom Toretto in the future. It's important.
So then we jump ahead, and, you know, the UEO is there arresting everyone, and the scarab machines are getting, like, shut down, and chips removed.
Mm-hmm.
And McGath is like, this is great, you know what, we're gonna, like, totally research this at the Institute completely, and then we'll bury it.
Mm-hmm. So much red tape, no one will ever know a thing. Yeah, that's what we do best. Eddie is somewhat conscious as he's being wheeled out and has one last moment with Mr. Tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little, like, you know, hang in there, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see you later, even though you're going to jail.
A little bit more about who owes who now. Another thing I appreciate about this episode is we know that he saved Tony's life.
Yes.
And it seems from how they talk about things that this happened before either of them joined the Navy. Like, this is... And there's no real clear statement on what he did. And I like that. I like just being left to imagine what happened between these two way back when.
Well, so here's the question.
Sure.
Everything else with Tony before this implies that he only joined the Navy as his out for getting out of prison.
Yes.
He was not military beforehand.
Right. Until they gave him gills for this experimental deal. Yes.
Yes. But their relationship.
Yeah.
Where they're gill buddies and, you know, like everything happened before military.
I think they had a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie did whatever he did to save Tony's life. And then he signed up for the military. And then Tony didn't. And he kept fooling around and being a criminal shit.
Okay.
Then Eddie got locked up, took the gill deal, but it didn't get him out of prison because Eddie made a deal with cops who lie.
Okay. So,
whereas Tony got caught for something else, made the gill deal,
yeah.
And then got enlisted in the UEO Navy as part of the gill deal.
So you are thinking their relationship does go past in the military, like...
Yeah, they both happened to wind up with gills in the Navy, but they did it in totally different orders.
Okay, because I was
lives,
like, I don't,
is what I think
they
happened.
Weren't in the military together.
No, I don't think so.
Which is what it was kind of sounding like you were saying. I was like, no. Like, that's not what happened with Tony. So,
no.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Gotcha.
It's convoluted, but it's the only way to make sense of how they talk here and how they talked in Daggers.
Yeah. So then McGath is like, hey, Tony, let's talk. Let's have a little chat.
Mm-hmm. You're a special young man, my young man.
Yes. And he's like, you know, there's not really anything I can do for your friend over there. And Tony's like, well, you know.
Sometimes people wind up places because they make a deal, you know, about a plea or something like that. That ain't exactly go down the way they made it. And the Secretary General's like, oh, you would like me to look at the circumstances of Eddie's plea deal? And Tony Piccolo says, yes! But without saying yes, he just says, you know, if someone looked at it, things might make themselves clear. And while, like, yeah, the Secretary General is not pussyfooting around. Like, he's speaking in plain language. You can do the same back.
Mm-hmm. Then we jump ahead to Eddie on the VidCon with Lucas.
You know, his friend.
Yeah.
Lucas.
And filling him in on what's going on. You know, they're going to retry the case. He's going to have, like, a new, you know, lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully
not Dagwood's lawyer. That guy sucked.
Like, can you feel, you know, tell Tony about this? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. I'll totally fill him in on this when I see him. I don't know where he is right now. And, oh, let me fill you in on stuff. You know, the technology, like, I totally cloned that shit before, like, I gave it back to them.
So now Lucas Wolinchek is the sole owner of the Project Scarab data.
Yeah, so he's like, I got a prototype, but it keeps fitzing out. And so we're working through it. But I'll talk to you later, man. I'll let Tony know you called. And then we cut to the women's bathroom.
Piccolo is using Project Scarab 2 to peep on nude women taking their ionic showers.
And guess what? It fritzes out.
And so 9 hot babes dressed only in towels strip him nude and chase him through the hall, which is like... He should be fired. He should be fired. He should be tried. He should be kicked out. But instead, what he gets is some, like, playful hazing. Like, he gets a Dear Penthouse, I Never Thought It Would Happen to Me story, actually.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing, but it's also incredibly hot. Like... But yes, as he's chased out, Dagwood is there, witness to all things, and he makes the Dagwood noise.
The little smirk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the end of the episode. Over the credits, Jonathan Ford himself is here to talk about the lionfish. And if that sounds familiar, it's because this is a Fish Fact rerun from the Watergate episode.
Yeah.
Not that long ago.
No.
Just a couple episodes.
Yeah.
Which is like 6 or 7 weeks. Well, excuse me, like closer to 6 months. Mm-hmm. So I guess I can forgive it. Hey, darling, have you got a fish fact?
I do.
Sleepyhead.
I do. So 3 days ago.
3 days ago.
The Smithsonian.
I will give you this grace.
The Smithsonian Mag.
Uh-huh.
Posted an article that biologists have discovered a surprisingly cute deep sea fish species.
I'll believe it when I see it. Oh, God, you're going to make me see it.
I am. It was discovered off the coast of California.
Here we come.
And it is the bumpy snailfish.
Bumpy snailfish.
Described by scientists as adorable. They also found the dark snailfish and the sleek snailfish, which is very exciting that they got three at the same time.
The triumvirate.
All of which thrive thousands of feet below the surface of the Pacific Ocean. And so they named these fishes in a study that was published at the end of August. So in general, mm-hmm. Here's a little description of them.
In general.
They have large heads and gelatinous bodies.
Oh, adorable. I can see why they'd be adorable.
And many of them have suction discs on their bellies, which allow them to stick to rocks or the seafloor or hitchhike on other animals.
Yeah, so do I. If I like want to do a party trick and have had three drinks in me.
Would you like to see this fish?
No, but I will. That's not adorable.
It's got a little smile.
It does look like the Sack Boy from that's Sack Boy.
I don't know what that is, but look at it. It's got beautiful fins. It's such a little friend.
No friend of mine.
I love it.
I know
you
do.
It's so cute.
It's not.
It is. It looks so sweet. And look, that's probably its little suction cup.
Yeah, it's suction tum tum.
It's got a suction tum tum.
It's adorable, so you have to call it a tum tum.
I like it. What's your fish fact? Probably not as cute.
My fish fact is kind of about fish. It is about a part of a fish, a structure, an organ that a fish would have.
Suck up.
Gills.
Oh, okay.
Gills are essentially a structure by which many, many, many capillaries are exposed to the water. Teeny tiny blood vessels mm-hmm. with walls thin enough that their exposure to the water will exchange oxygen and carbon dioxide with the bloodstream.
Okay.
Fish gills are near the mouth, so like that thing is like pushing the water through the gills. But other creatures may have external gills.
Mm-hmm.
Sea slugs, also known as nudibranchs, are named for having naked gills. The nude in nudibranch means naked.
They're nude!
Yeah.
Nudity!
And gill is like a breathing mechanism, so bronch, like bronchial tubes. Mm-hmm. There you go. Now, the reason that fish gills don't work in air, you go fishing, you take the fish out the water, it can't breathe, even though the air has far more free oxygen than water, is that without the buoyancy of being in the water, the gills flatten into each other.
Ew.
So like all the surface area that a gill needs to do that gas exchange isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
It's like a book with its pages frilled open just got squeezed shut.
Mm-hmm.
So if the surgical gills of Tony Piccolo fixed this issue and Tony is able to use his gills to breathe the air, as is hinted at in this episode, and also that one time he got sent in the poison gas area because if his lungs die, he has a second breathing organ.
Yeah.
If that were the case, I would think Tony would be hyper-oxygenated at all times.
Yeah, maybe.
Seeing as air has around, say, 50,000 times more oxygen than water, measured in parts per million. Therefore, he may exhibit signs of oxygen poisoning like nausea, vertigo, convulsions, or in extreme cases, vomiting.
Yeah.
So there's my fish fact. Why isn't Tony puking all day? Tell me.
Do you want to look at my cute fish again?
No!
Why not?
It's awful.
No, he's not. Ugh. I could have showed you things that were see-through.
Oh, no. I already had to look at sea slugs for mine. Ugh.
I like sea slugs.
I know. So, darling, what do you think of Blindsided?
Honestly, it's a good episode. I forget that I like this one.
Yeah? This one sneaks up on you?
It's one that I just forget. Honestly, I just forget about it. Mm-hmm. I just forget about the episode. But I love me some Tony.
I mean, so did the network schedulers.
That might be why it just fell in a crack
for a few months. Someone was looking for change in the couch cushions and they found a tape.
What if they...
Like, put it on it.
What if they really did just, like, misplace the tape and then were like, oh, fuck, found it. What the hell?
No, I like this episode. Again, as always, I like it because of Tony and Eddie. I think... Eddie brings out some good stuff in Tony, and seeing him, like, take charge of a mission is like, wow, yeah, this makes sense now, and it didn't 6 months ago. That's a cool thing to see on TV.
Yeah.
The effects are fun, the action is fun. That's really all this episode is.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of, like, fun asides, or here's some people having a goof that really livened up the previous episode. And made it excel. But this is still up there. This is good stuff.
Yeah.
I think it is interesting that these past three episodes all would make you think that, yes, season three is going to be about the infiltrator robots and the invisible spies and who knows what, like, Terminator psychics are there manipulating what to their own ends and driving these things forward. Clearly, these are all connected. It's not where things go.
No.
It really feels like they're building a springboard and then... I mean, they might be, but they're not going to jump off it. They're not going that way.
No, they are not.
But, like, you compared to the home stretch of season one, and you're getting things like Abalon with the Gill people. You're getting a lot of things that point to what season two would be, or at least especially how they would conceive it in that season two show Bible we looked at. You know, the three-part mission of Sequest is very visible in the last, like, four episodes of season one.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say that about this home stretch to season three, even though, like, I would watch that show.
Yeah.
I would watch the techno-thriller paranoid Sequest.
Yeah. And it would be, if they ran with some of that stuff and there was actually these, like, connected stories and stuff, it would be interesting. They could build upon it, right?
Yeah.
But we're not going there.
I think it's interesting that, like, when people make, say, a fanfic season of Sequest, they go back to season one. They bring in, they want Krieg, they want Westphal, and good on them. Sure. I'm curious if anyone has ever tried to tackle season 2.5. The sequel to season two that this, like, triptych seems to be pointing to in my mind.
I think there's a lot of stuff out there that actually is after season three, but it brings back people from all the seasons.
Sure, sure.
It's like the perfect world.
Yeah.
Because it's the best of all.
Right, right.
You know, you get...
Which is also a great impulse. Yeah, why not?
Mm-hmm.
But we're not quite done here.
No.
We have to make a surprise detour.
Yes.
Into a last-minute movie star minute.
Yes, we do. And we watched Aztec Rex.
Aztec Rex from 2008. Now, who does Roy Scheider play in this?
He's not in it.
Okay, Jonathan Brandis?
Nope.
No. So this has a couple of Sequest connections. First of all, I want to go back to season one.
Okay.
I want to talk about how, you know, something that was really special about season one that didn't follow on? The contributions of writer and producer David Kemper. Who, as we talked about, finishing his contributions to season one, left the show and began developing the pitches for a show that would eventually become Farscape years later.
Yes.
That happened. It became a success. I love it. If you haven't watched Farscape, I encourage you to, one, watch Farscape, two, listen to Bizarre Podcast Space Puppets, where I will talk to you about Farscape every single episode in sometimes excruciating detail.
And I'm on a few episodes.
I got
a special guest appearance.
Every single season.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Sci-Fi Channel's like, okay, we canceled your show, but we're going to have you executive produce a handful of our original movies. The first of those to reach air was Aztec Rex.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not just produced by a Sequest writer. No, it stars Marco Sanchez.
Yes, it does.
Sequest's own Miguel Ortiz as Rios.
Mm-hmm.
Rios is the chief lieutenant of Hernan Cortez.
Yes, but he's the nice one.
He's the nice one. He's
he has
good
a moral
boy.
Compass.
He's honorable. He's loyal. He protects the weak and defenseless.
Yes.
Or at least those who he believes to be. Because you know what? That lady he finds, she's got some hidden depths to prove.
Yes.
Yeah. So Aztec Rex.
So the concept of this, we got Cortez here.
Yes.
So
played by a 90210 guy?
Yeah.
Yes.
So Cortez and his merry men land in the New World.
Mm-hmm.
And what do they, and they're, you know, of course looking for gold and whatnot and stuff to take back.
This is a secret expedition that has covered up.
Yes.
To scout to see whether there will be a big expedition that we know happened. Yes.
So there's only a few of them. There's only a handful of them there. They encounter a village of natives, right? And of course, they're really fucking racist and awful about that. but the thing is in this land...
This specific valley
has... dinosaurs.
Yes.
There are dinosaurs that have not died out. There are T-Rexes specifically.
Two of them.
And the locals, you know, because they're Aztecs, cut out the heart of sacrifices to try to feed the bloodlust of the thunder lizards.
That is their term for the great beasts that they fear and revere in equal measure.
Uh-huh. And it's only in their valley.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, you know, there's pros and cons to this. Because we got the thunder lizards. No other, like, village is trying to attack us. But we have the thunder lizards. And they keep trying to eat us.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why, like, our village is only, like, 5 people.
Now, something to note is, again, to compare to Farscape. This has a budget that's slightly less than an episode of Farscape.
Mm-hmm.
For
a whole movie.
But what's important for actually seeing budget is dollars per minute. So it's actually much, much lower.
Mm-hmm.
And it was filmed not in Australia where the dollar stretches farther, but in Hawaii where a dollar does not go nearly as far.
No. So it is like the valley from Jurassic Park.
Yes. Same filming locations. Yes. As Jurassic Park.
But Jesus. They definitely were tight on funds for their set dressings and costumes and graphic effects.
You're going to see better executed, more like complete visual effects in any given episode of Sequest from, you know, 1993 than this 2008 TV movie.
Yes.
But what you will get in Aztec Rex is verve, gumption.
Yes.
There's gumption. And so much blood.
Oh my god.
So much buckets of blood.
When we say buckets of blood, we mean someone is literally throwing a bucket of blood on someone
yes.
from off screen every time blood is needed.
So,
and if we're gonna cut out the heart of our enemy to feed to the dinosaur, you better believe that blood is going to be all the way up to the person's neck.
Yes, yes. When our native princess kills the asshole shaman that she's betrothed to, the arterial spray that just goes everywhere.
Yes. this.
Oh, my goodness. Spoilers for Aztec Rex, by the
there's
way.
There's also some amazing, like, there's a scene where, like, a face gets ripped off.
Yeah.
There's a scene where, like, skin gets blown off.
Yeah, the visual effects where the second dinosaur dies are really good.
Yes.
They are not high resolution. Right?
No.
They are not expensive effects, but they are very effective.
They had an idea and they went for
yes,
it.
Yes,
yes. And our buddy Marco.
Our buddy Marco Sanchez.
He is just Ortiz.
This performance is just Ortiz. This is the most one-to-one. If you like what he's doing in Sequest, you'll like this.
You know when, like, they go to the virtual, like, dream place and he's, like, in Gone with the Wind?
Yeah.
And very questionable uniform?
Mm-hmm.
I like to think this is another version of his dream.
Because, yeah, he has the same bearing, he has the same attitude. He is, like, I imagine in a world where a space show could be kind of like Grey's Anatomy.
Uh-huh.
Where people get new jobs and move on, and then people get promoted. A thing that space shows are always talking about, but never happens, because they don't have the cast turnover to make it happen.
Yeah.
This is Lieutenant Commander Ortiz, right? Mm-hmm. This is Ortiz after he takes on a Brody role.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is where Ortiz would be going in that sort of show.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, he's got a sense of humor, but more than that, he's got a sense of duty.
Sense of duty.
And that's what's really coming forward, because he's now a leader of men and not just the guy that listens to the sonar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes goes sleeveless with a laser gun.
I love that they found an excuse to be like, I know your arms aren't as buff as they were, but we're still going to find a way to remove your sleeves.
You mean when he had a 20-second marriage ceremony and then immediately had sex within 6 feet of the priest who just says, I'm going to pretend I'm not going to hear what's happening now.
Yes. Yes. This is exactly what I mean.
Folks, I like this movie.
It was enjoyable. It's definitely one of the top ones we've watched. It's not All That Jazz.
It's not.
Like, nothing can be.
If Sidekicks was the movie that I hoped it would be halfway through.
But that Sidekicks ending.
But that's like...
That was fucking insane.
I am honestly surprised season two never featured, like, either a lost world where, oh, dinosaurs walk the earth, or a lost tribe. And, like, UEO First Contact. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Never happened. And watching Aztec Rex, I'm like, I'm sure that got pitched. They must have both got pitched.
Honestly, I'm so glad we didn't have like a First Tribe thing.
It would have been so bad.
We got questionable shit happening anytime we're talking about people from like a different background, and that would have been atrocious.
Hey, Shan, you're Asian. That means arranged marriages and weird Southeast Asian voodoo,
right? That's
why
we didn't have, like, we didn't have a lost tribe, because we didn't have someone on the crew that could suddenly, like, I don't know, speak to them in their language and be like, oh, yes, this was, like, my grandmother's tongue. And they ventured off from, like, our clan to an, like, oh my god.
So we've mentioned that Aztec Rex features a Spanish priest.
Mm-hmm.
Who is another Sequest connection?
Yeah.
The actor was the fisherman informant that told from the bar in Whale Song, telling Max Scully where he could find a boat that didn't care too much whether it caught a whale or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But another Sequest connection, one of the conquistadors is already a guy who keeps reminding us he's Christian, but he's also a loser who sucks.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's a little Sequest. I did some original research.
Yeah.
On Aztec Rex.
Yeah.
Which is just reaching out to a writer of this film and also David Kemper's close collaborator on Farscape, Ricky Manning. Quote, do you have any stories or anything else to say about Aztec Rex? And his response is, I wrote it. I've already apologized. The check's cleared. I got a free trip to Hawaii out of it. Deachin Lachman is phenomenal. That is the name of the actress who plays the like, yeah, the Aztec princess, mm-hmm. basically, who turns out to be an action princess, mm-hmm. and marries Marco Sanchez.
And cuts the heart out of her
ex-husband. Cuts the heart out of her awful fiance.
Uh-huh. And was like, here, dinosaur, eat this.
Eat this!
Yeah.
It's gruesome.
I highly suggest watching it. It's on Tubi.
This movie's good! This movie is fun. This movie is enjoyable.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
Do you want to tell Ricky Manning that we liked it?
It works.
Like, why'd you apologize? It's pretty great, dude.
I can understand apologizing as a writer because especially the first half, first two thirds, it is working so broad. It is working so stock. Like, yeah. You've seen all of these people before. Like, this is definitely, like, there's a brief and we need dialogue to fit that brief. But, like, once things really start, once they kill the first dinosaur, things pick up and take some turns,
yeah.
And like, yeah, this is written by the Scorpius guy. This is the Scorpius guy working short form. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, maybe I'll send this one to Mr. Manning, a guy whose perspective and work I really respect, and it does make me curious about the next one in this block of sci-fi original movies. That was executive produced by and also co-written with David Kemper, called Heatwave.
Heatwave.
And that, as I recall, is about alien dinosaurs using global warming to prepare the way for an invasion of Earth.
What?
And to continue the Farscape rather than Sequest connections, it features Francisca Buller and Wayne Pygram in supporting roles.
Goodness.
Gotta look for that on Tubi.
Yeah.
Because you know what? That's where it would be, if anywhere.
So if you've enjoyed our episode,
mm-hmm.
you should leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to us, but especially if it's on Apple Podcasts, because we'll read it.
Because we'll read it. I will read every 5-star review left for us on Apple Podcasts.
You can also tell your friends.
Yes.
Word of mouth goes a long way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you can follow us on Blue Sky at WSKRS Whiskers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And every day we are sharing perspectives, sharing some information. Just today, the day of recording, I found on Sequest Vault a bit of the storyboards for The Siamese Dream. In fact, the first page of storyboards, it's the cold open.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it. It ran for more than a page of boards.
Yeah.
But... And that's a really interesting thing to share. So I'm glad we have our angle to share it. And, of course, that SequestVault.com exists for me to find things like that.
Yes. It's a good place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not affiliated, but very appreciative.
Yes.
Yes.
So, I guess with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant. And in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future. Dinosaurs.
Perhaps.
They go rawr.
Roar!
Roar!